welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous. This is another bonus episode. It's the third in the series of my interesting people of Berlin. So yeah, today I'm talking to a Turkish chef who lives in Berlin. His name is Yelen
Özel.
Ugh, I can't do it. I'm horrible. Yeah, it's interesting. We talk about what it's like to be a Turkish person living in Germany and the difference between a Turkish born person from Turkey and then being born in Germany and being Turkish. It's a whole thing. There's a lot, you guys, there's so many politics in it, guys. You're going to be like, what? And then you're going to hear all about his experiences working in like very nice, like Michelin star restaurants and the experiences of that. And then you're going to hear about his love of the NBA and how that's a metaphor for working in nice restaurants. So yeah, tune in.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hello, everybody. It's Anna. I'm back. This is Ethnically Ambiguous. This is another bonus episode. This is part of my Interesting People in Berlin series. It's three parts. This is the third part. That's right. You guys are going to meet my friend, Yelen. This is going to be an interesting episode because the last two people I interviewed were both Americans living in Germany, in Berlin. And now this is going to be a Turkish man living in Berlin. So it's a different vibe. It's a different world. It's not the same. He would agree. So Yelen, you know, I met him through Estrella, who's my good friend who I went to college with, who now lives in Berlin. So yeah, we're going to get into his life and how he got here and all that. So Yelen, how would you say your last name?
Özer.
Yelen Özer?
Özer.
Özer?
Özer.
Özer. I can't do it. The Turkish accent is, it's like, it's like, because my dad
like
is...
You guys can't manage to put your tongue just behind your teeth. That's the thing. Özer.
Özer.
Yeah.
Wow, I just put Yelen my... Özer. That's the trick. Yelen Özer.
That's how we survived in Germany. We have all the tricks.
So you... How long have you been living in Berlin?
It's been 14 years now.
14 years?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
I came with Angela Merkel.
You came with what?
Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, was the first time Chancellor after a month after I arrived here.
Angela Merkel, that crazy bitch. Okay, she's actually, I have thoughts. But, you know, you came from Istanbul, correct?
Yeah, I grew up in Istanbul. I was 22. Then I moved up here, to the north, yeah.
And what brought you here?
Well, to be really honest, I was at the university there. I was studying history, but I was like also, I really liked having parties and stuff. And I really want to, like, because I went to an Austrian college in Istanbul and I learned German there. So I went a couple of times to Europe while I was also younger. And then at some, like around between 20, 22, I just... like had this feeling of I just want to live somewhere else than Istanbul. But it wasn't like I wasn't trying to escape or anything. It was like more, it was a normal thing. My both parents did their PhDs in the States, then came back to Turkey. I mean, I was also born in the States. So,
right, you were born in Maryland.
Yeah, I was born in Maryland, Baltimore. I was there till I was two and a half years old, and then they moved back to Istanbul, so I grew up there. But it was always a very normal thing in our family. Like, you know, my sister went to a French school, I went to an Austrian school, and it was also like my parents were like, they were kind of against it when I left, because I didn't finish university, I just like applied for Humboldt University here. And I said, it's going to be fine, I'll just study history there. Came here, but it was like kind of, yeah, of course, at some point you need to go out of where you grew up and you need to go somewhere else and experience. That was the motive in my family. So it wasn't so, it wasn't such a incredible jump to like suddenly. And it was also like how I came to Berlin was like I went to DAAD, which is like the German, like Germany has offices around the world who, if you go there and ask questions, who give you like information and like how you can go to Germany. And I started dating the girl who was working there. And she said at some point, because I was like thinking Münster, Thüringen, like small cities. And at some point she said, dude, you need to write Berlin. You need to go to Berlin. At that time, I've never been to Berlin. I've never been to Germany. So I, but I was that kind of a guy, you know, like I was like, yeah, that's fine. It's going to be fine. Yeah. So yeah, I applied to Humboldt University for, like I was studying history anyways. So I applied for history bachelor here. I got accepted. Then I had to pass a German test. So I flew here on September. I did the test. I passed it. Then suddenly I was here.
You never went back?
I mean, like in a...
Like you went to visit, or, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's like the first 3 years, I would say, almost half the year I was spending in Turkey still. I mean, it's not that easy. I mean, I said like I never looked back and stuff, but first of all, I had no idea what it meant to be Turkish in Germany, which is a... I mean, I had to learn it here. Like, yeah, that was strange. That was tough.
Tell me, what is it to be Turkish in Germany?
I mean, I would say it's being Indian or Jamaican in England or Algerian or Tunisian in France. Like, you know, we are the people that white and poor Germans look down upon to feel themselves better. And there is no... I mean, it's a very vast issue for me because, like, I grew up in Turkey, in Istanbul, in a higher middle class family, like, with, and never really thought about this kind of questions while growing up, even though Turkey is also a very divided, ethnically divided country. And I was always at the top of that food chain. Mm-hmm. And suddenly coming here, and because of given ethnicity, that suddenly realizing that if you are a brain surgeon or a homeless person, it's around the same thing for most of the society as long as you are Turkish. Like you're not a brain surgeon, you're a Turkish brain surgeon. You're not an actor, you're a Turkish actor, if that makes sense. Yeah. Like and I was, yeah, I never grew up like that. You know, I didn't grow up also like as identifying as Turkish or any of it. Like I was just me, like, yeah, but it goes away. Like, you know, you learn to put everything in perspective, why you are here. I mean, I could go back whenever I wanted to. So after a couple of years, you start realizing, like, being angry or being just, like, as long as I can say, well, if I don't want to, I can always go back. Mm-hmm. And I don't. So there is at some point no point of being just, like, all the time angry or irritated or, like, combative about it, I guess. Well, yeah, also after a certain time, of course, like, this is how society treats you. Like, you know, for example, I went to a club and we're having fun, you're flirting with somebody, and then Germans love this question. It's always the second question that they ask. What's your name? Where are you from? Mm-hmm. And when I said I'm Turkish, like, it was a very normal thing. For example, that the girl that you have been dancing and flirting just stops and without saying anything, just turns around and leaves.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And which is like, you know, and which is like, you have to accept it because you are Turkish. Like, But then you start, of course, like building yourself for yourself a life. You start meeting people out of the context of society. Like, they are not like faceless masses that you are angry with. They're like the person in your class, the person who you play basketball with, your girlfriend, your some, like, you know, you start not seeing them as Germans. And also for me, I mean, I speak pretty good German. So, so it went away like after a couple of years, I would say. Like, it stayed as positive racism. Like, people keep trying to like speak with me Italian or Spanish, and like just like they are dead sure that I'm Spanish.
You're ethnically ambiguous is what you are.
I am. I always made that joke, like I'm like a brown people paratrooper. Like, you can't really paratroop me behind the enemy lines wherever, where there is a lot of brown people. And as long as I'm sitting at the corner without saying anything, I'll be... Which is like funny and all, because I've been here for 14 years, like I said. And I don't even have a Turkish passport. So it was this ethnically ambiguous, was always like, I have an American passport. But I grew up in Turkey. I had identified with the mother tongue of Turkish. But, and I live in Germany. And whenever I went then, like the last couple of years, to visit my friends in different European cities, like there is the joke always, because I react to many things as a German would, not as an American or a Turkish. Like, for example, I went to Rome many times. I love that city. It just fucking drives me crazy. Their metros, like which is a very German thing. Like, you know, because the metro is so dingy and they never come on time and like that kind of stuff. And then I realized also through years that whatever the society here tried to do, or whatever my anger and irritation towards that society, it's just there is a certain social assimilation, which, or let's not say assimilation, but the stuff that you take, I guess. This stuff also, not only that I have this flat, but like things which makes me feel, okay, I grew up in Istanbul, it will always be my first love. Mm-hmm. But if you ask me, if you woke me up from a deep sleep and ask me, what's your home city? I think 9 out of 10, I would say Berlin.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm at that point in my life. So it makes it even more difficult to carry this Turkish identity as a chip on my shoulder. I don't. I mean, if I say I do, it would be a lie. And because I don't carry it as a chip on my shoulder, I get it so, so seldom now that anybody even comments about me being Turkish, like, you know.
Right. And you live in a very Turkish neighborhood, Neukölln, which has now basically become like the hip neighborhood. Everyone's gentrifying it now.
Well, yeah, that's the point. It's not a Turkish neighborhood anymore. Like, I mean, when I first moved in here, like only even in this building, there were like 3 Turkish families. And like, you could seriously live here without speaking one word German or English. Like, as long as you spoke Turkish or Arabic, you could like live for 20 years here. And now it's not like that. I mean, I have to say, I don't identify. Like, that's the funny thing. Because, for example, every time when I go to a Turkish-German restaurant here and speak with them in Turkish, almost every second time, they call the other guys to the counter and tell me, say something, say something. Look, listen to him, say something. Because they speak with this broken Turkish of like 60s, 70s, which nobody uses in Turkey anymore. Like, they use like words that's just like from 60s films and stuff. Because their grandparents came here and they were the last really Turkish-speaking people. So there is like a divide, like a big divide, like also not only linguistic, also political. like, because there is like people like me and my friends who come from Turkey to here are mostly people who also escaped the political situation in Turkey right now. And the German Turks here, whenever they have to vote, they are voting for the current regime in Turkey, which is like very showing, because they are like, they don't know the real Turkey. They have a projection of Turkey, which is a beacon for them, because they think everything is so horrible here. And they have that chance to go to Turkey at some point, everything's going to be fine.
Right. They see it as this like kind of like homeland utopia, but in reality, it's just another country dealing with its own political strifes, just like Germany is, just like every country is at this point.
Well, there is like, I had to do this argument many, many times with my countryman. Like I even at some point I didn't have so much money, so I worked for this Turkish newspaper Hürriyet for a year as a photojournalist. And it's mainly, of course, like you know, works with the German-Turkish community here. So I had to go do like interviews and like take photos and stuff. So we had like this interview series where we went to the prison, but like prison for young people, like for first offenders.
Like juvenile hall stuff?
Well, they were like between 16 and 19. Like you didn't have to be underage. Like it's like for first offenders, you can go home at the end of the day, but like during the day you have to be there, do course.
Yeah, we don't have that in America.
Yeah, it's like a kind of a social, still from the social state era of Germany, I think. Anyhow, so we are speaking with these, like, and mostly, of course, it's in Kreuzberg, and 90% of it Turkish. Mm-hmm. It's like, guys. And I'm like, we have like this questions, and I'm like asking, so where do you see yourself in 5 years? And they all say, in Istanbul. And like the fifth guy, I was like, dude, like, what are you going to do in Istanbul? I grew up in Istanbul. There is like 80 million people. You don't speak well Turkish. It's going to be so difficult for you. And you think universal healthcare is a thing, right? And it's like, yeah, of course. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's not. You like, you know, this like, I will leave the German pass. I'm going to get the Turkish pass. And Istanbul is my dream. But they think everything they take here, they have here, as natural as the bread they are taking. Like the universal healthcare, if they don't work, state gives them money. If they don't have a flat, state gives them flats. No, dude. You go to Istanbul, you're on your own. You're on your own. That's a jungle of 80 million people. And they don't know. So it's just like really, that kind of stuff really divides me. Also, like it's, I'm telling this because I realized this, me being Turkish is just a word. Like, you know, yes, we do speak Turkish, all of us in a sense. But other than that, it's just such a vast divides and gaps, mm-hmm. even in between us, that makes it difficult. Yeah, I
didn't even realize that. I never thought about the difference between like Turkish people who were raised in Germany versus actual Turkish people who came from Turkey. I wasn't even,
they've
I had no sense
for
of it.
60 years. Mm-hmm. They've been here for 60 years now. Like the fifth generation is now here. There is like those guys that I interviewed, for example, they never left Berlin, mm-hmm. let alone Germany. Like that's all they know. It's just because their parents. It's a very difficult situation. But like, as I said, there is in Turkey, actually, there is a saying. It's, I don't know if you can translate it. Türkiye'de Almancı, Almanya'da yabancı, which means, in Turkey, you are Almancı is something like the, you know, the little fish who just suck something from the big fish, like who are just like, It's like a little German link or something. So in Turkey,
you're like a leech.
Yeah, like you are something like German in Turkish when you say Almanca. So in Turkey, you are called something like German, and in Germany, you're called a foreigner. So you don't have a, like in Turkey, the moment a German Turk opens his mouth, the first thing you go like, oh, you're from Germany. Mm-hmm. Like that's, and you are treated completely different also. You are treated like a German tourist who speaks bad Turkish. Mm. Like, you know, if I'm going to buy something for 10 lira, they are being sold that same thing for 50 lira. Also, they are just being treated like stupid tourists as well. So they don't, it's a difficult place. I don't have that. I can't go to Turkey and switch, mm-hmm. immediately switch it on and I'm Turkish again, as if I was living there the whole time.
Wow. What a world. I mean, I feel like a lot of like children of immigrants feel that way. There's like no, if you're not in your home country, like when I'm in Iran, I'm always the American cousin. Then when I'm here, I'm always like the ethnically ambiguous friend. Like I'm always like the diverse friend. I'm never like just, you know, whatever. I'm just like you, you know. On that note, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll come back. I have more questions for you. We'll be right back. Okay, we are back with the yelling Uzza. Did I say it right? Kind of.
Well, I have to say, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's funny you said Alman, because we, in Farsi, we say like Alman for Germany as well. God, Turkish and Iran. Turkish.
Spanish words.
Is it? That's how we adopted it? It's funny how we have a lot of words that just slowly slipped into our vocabulary.
It's one of the Gothic tribes, Alemanni. That's why the name is coming, Alman.
It's a Gothic tribe?
Yeah, like Vandals, for example. Vandals are also a Gothic tribe.
Vandals?
Yeah, like Vandalism, which comes from Vandals, who are like a Goth tribe who came from... You know the big tribe, how do you call it, like this millions of people moving around, like reshaping Europe at the end of Roman Empire?
No? What is this?
A lot of names come from there that you use in the all day life, like Vandalism, because they were a very violent and warlike tribe. It stayed. Alemanni is the ones who settled down in the middle Europe, the Germans.
Mm. Wow, I didn't know that. That's why you're the good history person. But something you didn't... Oh, okay, real quick. So why don't you have Turkish citizenship anymore?
Because in Turkey, after you are 18, you have to go to military. So I finished my 18th birthday on a Tuesday, and on Wednesday I applied to get out of my Turkish citizenship because I didn't want to go to military. And I already had my American passport, you know, because I was born there. So
what happens if you get rid of your Turkish citizenship? You have to leave?
No. I got myself, like you were looking at it the other day, that is a card. It's called the blue card. It's I'm an American with Turkish parents. So it gives me like all the rights a Turkish citizen has, which is funny, by the way, that thing, because I took it after a year of court battle. They tried not to giving it to me because that is invented by the Turkish government for German Turks. So because they want them to stay here, get the German passport, and then when they went to after working, like I know the German word Rente, like when you are a senior citizen, you're not working anymore.
Retirement.
When you go to when they went to retirement, they want them to take all the money and come to Turkey and buy real estate and spend money there. So they said, it's okay, leave the Turk, because Germany was forcing them to choose between German citizenship or Turkish citizenship. Well, the Turkish government said, it's okay, you go get the German citizenship and then we'll give you this so you can still live and buy stuff and spend money in Turkey.
Wow. So it's literally just a thing made up by the Turkish country. It's like a blue card, but a green card in a way, but for like people to basically continue to live in Turkey.
The two things that I cannot do is to go to military and vote. Those two I cannot do, but other than that, I have inheritance right, or I can go live there indefinite time. So yeah.
Wow, I didn't know about that. I was wondering. Yeah, okay. So you gave that up, so you didn't have to go to military, yeah. And then you applied to university and came to Berlin eventually.
I took the test. Like, I was already at the Bosphorus University in Istanbul for 2 years. And then I transferred to Humboldt University. Yeah, and then I was there. And after my bachelor, I realized I don't want to... I mean, I'm still totally interested in history, but I didn't want to do it. Like, I didn't have the drive to do academic work. Mm-hmm. I was also partying a lot. And I, like, you know, I just need to do something else. So I started working in kitchens. And it turned out that was kind of my calling. So since then, I've been doing that almost 10 years now.
You're a chef.
Yeah, I am.
So, what was like? So you started working in one restaurant. That was very tough to work in, based on my understanding. I don't know. You don't have to say the name or anything, but you're working like a very stereotypical fine dining establishment that has a very intense atmosphere in the kitchen. Is that correct?
Yeah, that was like, I mean, I like to give it a context. Like, I started actually, it wasn't my goal. Like, I just finished the bachelor. I didn't know what to do. I didn't have any money. So I started like washing dishes in kitchens. Like, a friend of mine found me that job, which, like, you know, I could listen to music, I can smoke weed while I'm like working. I didn't care so much. And then like one day one of the chefs went crazy and the kitchen chef told me, hey, can you do it? And I'm like, yeah, I don't care. And then I realized, oh, this is fun. Like, I like doing this. And then I started working in better and better establishments through the years. And last year I gave my like the exam, like the German exam for like being a cook. And after that, I decided, like you said, to go out and find a really, like, you know, Michelin, like borderline Michelin kind of restaurant. And I was working in a restaurant like that, like till March, I think. But then, like, there was no going crazy or like big fights or anything. But like, I told them, like, okay, this was an amazing experience, but I'm not going to do this.
And what were your experiences like? You don't have to go into too much detail, but I'm curious, like, you know, we all have this like kind of romanticized view of what these kitchens are like. Like, you're creating these amazing dishes, but like, I feel like there's a very intense reality that we don't see as the diner.
Yes. I mean, first of all, this was the first time that I was really working with a chef who was like almost a household name and still making her name. So it wasn't like, oh, we're just like a team and we are creating this. We were like her extensions. Like, there is associé, entremetier. Like, I'm not going to bore you guys now. Like, but like, there is a, it's like being in a ship. There are like sections and there are like people who help there, and there are chef de parties. I was the chef de party of Gamange, which is like the cold dishes and the first things that you would order when you come into the restaurant. The thing is, the tone is very hard because like there is like this sports, like, we are the best, we're gonna do, like, you know, you just like intensely follow what other restaurants do. Like, there is like never like really, oh, look how nice what they did. But it's always like this, how did they think of that? And we didn't, like, we should do, like, there is like always this undercurrent of that.
It's very competitive.
Yeah. It's also, you have to have a kind of a comrade kind of thing, because I mean, I used to start working at 12 midday. Then we had like half an hour pause where we ate at 5:30. And then we finished around midnight. Mm-hmm. And then I went home, I slept. Before I slept, I did the mise en place list for the next day.
What's that?
It's just like I wrote down everything, like because I was chef de partie, I had to know, like, for example, how many kilos of that sauce I have in the fridge, in the freezer, what I have to do next day, how much of it I have to do, if there are groups next day. Like I had like a, let's say, one and a half hours of like that kind of planning, because without that planning, I can't, like, you just like, I have so much things to do. I have so much preparations to do. If I don't have a plan, I can't do it. And then, like, if I do a parsley mayo by hand with everything I'm doing, like, I'm doing the parsley oil myself, like, anyways, and then the chef can come and look at it and go, like, that's not green enough. And then you have to throw it out, put it into your plan again, and finish it in the same, like, it's just like this drive of perfection. I was doing carrot chips. I was like dreaming of carrot chips because like they were like, I'm doing it, like I have to do 5 kilos of it and every one of them have to be perfectly straight. If not, you can't throw them out. Like that kind of, but I can't throw them out because then she will come and tell me how I'm buying those. How are you throwing them out? So there is this sense of you're going to have to do it perfectly. And if you don't, you have to find a way to make them seem perfect. Or like somehow. And then there comes like this New Year's Eve, for example, that we did like 155 people where like there was like Jake Gyllenhaal. Like we had Obama's came. Like, you know, there is the standard is also, like, if Obama is there, you can't just, like, go, like, this time it didn't work. Like, you know, it has to work always. Like, we had a saying, if the waiters asked us, did you do this? We always answered, you ask me where it is. You never ask me if I did it. I always do it. You just ask me where you can find it. Which was funny in the beginning, but like, then I understood it became the reality. And I'm 35, by the way. My chef was 31, the sous chef was 29, and all the other chef de parties were between 23 and 24. Because this, that kind of, like, it was like I was playing street ball, and then I decided because a scout told me, oh, you actually play good ball, maybe you should play at NBA. And then I suddenly found myself in an NBA season. And I was like, after 5 months, I'm like, dude, you guys are, this is, I physically and mentally, those guys start working when they are 16. Mm-hmm. When they are 22, they already have 6 years of fine dining experience behind them. So it was an amazing experience. And it taught me like more in 3 months than I learned in 3 years. Like, definitely it'll help me with everything I want to do for myself with my caterings, pop-ups. But like, yeah, whenever you guys go to that kind of place again, like, that's we are being shouted at. That's, I can tell you, like, it's just like, it's personal, it's close, it's personal, it's long hours and competitive. And it's just like I told Estrella, like, I'm at a point in my life, I don't want my life to support my job, but my job should be one of the things which support my life. Like, you know, and if I'm 23 and have been working in kitchen since 16, hey, if anybody is listening, I don't want to like break any spirits. I love cooking. There is nothing that I would rather do. It's just go into it with the knowledge of, like, that's,
it's a tough life.
But for your podcast, I have said this, it's one of the best ethnically ambiguous place because nobody gives a damn. Like, we had a Croatian woman, a Uruguayan guy, a German guy, a Brazilian guy, and me. And our kitchen chef, Sophia, was half French, half German. And we never talked about where we're from, like, other than, oh, do you guys do that meat also in Uruguay like that? Oh, is it like this in Croatia? Like, you know, it's just, other than that, it's a talent thing. Like, you know, can you do it? Yes. Then I don't care. You can come from moon. It was really refreshing for me, I have to say. That's one of the reasons I like kitchen also in Germany, maybe. Maybe, yeah. Because it doesn't matter where you're from.
It doesn't matter. You just have to make the goddamn food. Wow. Okay, that was great. We're going to take another quick commercial break. We'll be right back. And we are back with Yelen Özur. I just almost, like, chopped my tongue off saying that. So... yeah, we heard about your experience coming here to Germany from Turkey. We heard about your experience in the kitchen. And now I want to talk to you about something that I didn't know you would be a fan of this, obviously, but we, like, casually got into a conversation about the NBA. Yeah. And I learned that you're a huge basketball fan. Yes. How did you get into the NBA? Like, it's so random to meet someone who's like, oh, I'm following the playoffs right now. Like, tell me more.
Well, I used to play, I played 4 years basketball when I was, like, growing up, like, professionally, I was, like, young. But then it was the Michael Jordan eras, and I was, like, waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning before I going to, like, you know, those, I'm also older people, so that Utah Jazz Bulls series and stuff. And then I gave a big pause because I had all the other stuff that was going on. But, like, I used to always follow kind of playoffs because I really like the game. Like, I really like the game. And I genuinely believe that that's the toughest, like, tier of that game being played. And, yeah, when Anna and me met now here, just the playoffs just began. And I am, like, I'm a Philadelphia fan, by the way. Shout out to Philadelphia from here. Yeah, I'm like, I love the game, really, and I love the intensity and the competition as well. I mean, I'm like, I was kind of being like, oh, it's very competitive in the kitchen, but, like, I am also a bit of a competitive guy, and I like watching competitive sports, like people trying to be, like, you know, not beat each other, but, like, be better than each other. Just, like, enjoy watching that. And if it coincides with the sports that I happen to like, what do I want more other than a beer and maybe French fries watching it? Yeah.
Wow. So who were the teams you followed, like, growing up? Like, who were your favorite teams outside of, like, Philadelphia? You follow 76ers?
I follow 76ers because I was a big Allen Iverson fan. So that made me also a 76ers fan, actually, which is, like, for an American audience, I have to say, Allen Iverson made NBA a thing in, like, all around the world. Like, I would even say even more than Michael Jordan, because Michael Jordan was one of those NBA guys, just better. But Allen Iverson, we just couldn't understand. He was like an alien for us, but played amazing basketball. So it was like the classical, I guess. It was like the Lakers. Everybody knew about Lakers. Magic Johnson. And then Michael Jordan and the Bulls era. And then Allen Iverson, Philadelphia. And then there was Kobe and Shaq. And I have to say, I kind of tuned out when LeBron came into the league. So I never, like, got the young LeBron. I only got this bad LeBron now, which the Los Angeles, I mean, I don't want to say bad, but I don't like LeBron so much. So, hi, LeBron, if you're listening to
LeBron's a huge fan of the show. Sorry, LeBron, so sorry. He puts all the money in this show. You don't hate on our sponsor.
No. I mean, he's an amazing basketball player. I like team sports, okay? That's why it's actually, like, I like Milwaukee right now. I love if there is a guy who's, like, really good and all the other guys know what their role is in it. And I see whenever I watch them, they have fun. That's also what I wish if I ever have my own kitchen, mm-hmm. or if I ever have to work again. In a, like, you know, I always reflect on that when I watch a game. It's, I don't care how much points they did or if that's blah. It's just I want to see if the guys are having fun mm-hmm. playing with each other. And I see that in not so many teams, truth to be told. I see it with Houston. I don't know, James Harden is boring. I see it with Milwaukee. And I see it with, well, not so really, but I like Philadelphia. I think Allen Iverson just did something to me, so I will always stay a Philly guy. So that's what I like about NBA, I guess. Team sports.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like a weird metaphor for your kitchen.
Well, because it's also like that, you know, they always draft this Croatian guy and there's like this weird blah guy who always gets into fights outside of the court, but like it's just like they don't care. As long as you don't, you know what you have to do, what you're bringing to that team, and you're like there day in, day out, mm-hmm. like, and you know who has your back. You know what you're like. I don't know, maybe it's been like 10 years and it's been a tough Sisyphus kind of climb for me, coming from Roman historian bachelor to dishwasher to chef. Mm-hmm. And I really came to deeply appreciate this, like, you know, leaving off the bullshit of the outside world, and you know, you're here now. This is like, you have to get into rhythm. These guys are your guys. Mm-hmm. You're going to have their backs. They're going to have your back as long as this 8-hour shift. Because that fine dining, hey, we had like 270 people in 4 hours mm-hmm. with 5 courses. It's just like you cannot bring your private problems. You cannot bring your chip on your shoulders. You cannot bring like, oh, my girlfriend did this. Oh, you looked at me like this funny. Yeah. That really disturbs me. Mm-hmm. And I watch NBA because I see only teams win. Only the teams win. Not with the talent, but the teams win who know how to have each other's back and how to just leave outside stuff outside of the court. And that's just like kind of therapeutic for me. It relieves me, like, yeah. to watch that, to see the good guys win in my book, like, you know.
Wow, that's a really good metaphor for all of it. Wow, Yellen, I feel like I know you so much better. You were so worried to do this podcast. So see how easy it is? You already have made an entire thread of a metaphor through the entire podcast. That's amazing. Thank you so much for doing this show.
Of course, it was my pleasure.
Is there anything else you want to say?
Well, we'll be in California.
Is there anything you want to promote? Oh, where are you working now? I know you're working at a different place now.
Oh, I'm working in one of the, there are like 3 big Markthalle in Berlin. Markthalle Neu.
It's a market hall.
Market hall, yeah. I'm working in one of them, Marianneke Markthalle. Ulrike Piche, my first chef who really put me on the way for the exam. She's also an alumni of Slow Food University, which has also a lot of branches in California, I think. And yeah, if you ever happen to come to Berlin, come to Marianneke Markthalle and I'll do you a bio burger or fry you a nice meat.
Yeah, you guys work mostly with meat. That's your thing. Yeah, you, I got a burger from your place today. It was great. What is it called, the place?
Pichas, which is going to be very difficult for you to say. Pichas.
Pichas.
Yes.
How do you spell that?
That's such an American thing, guys, by the way. P-I-E-C-H-A-S.
You have to spell it so people can know how to get there. They're not going to be like, oh, Pichas. And people are going to be like, what are you talking about?
No. I'm just like joking always yesterday because she tells me, spell it. We don't do it in Europe. Like, when you say spell it, we're always like, What was?
Yeah, because Americans can't understand your accents. Yeah, we're like, what? Yeah, cool, cool.
I just find it personally funny. Like, you know, here you just write it and show it to the person. But like, yeah, I learned it. I'm doing it. I'm an American on paper as well.
You so are American. do you want anyone? You want to promote your Instagram or anything?
Yeah, sure. I'm going to spell it. It's YALINOFS KKNI. Yeah. That's Yalinovsky.
At Yalinovsky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Follow. I saw you post pictures of food that you make.
I only post pictures of food. I don't use it as a private account. I just like do for my pop ups or caterings. If I have a good picture of it and I post that. Yeah, follow it. Follow me on Instagram.
Yeah, follow him for pictures of Yellen's amazing food. He's cooked for me the whole time I'm here because I'm hungry and useless. So, yeah, thank you for doing the show.
It's my pleasure.
That was so great. I hope you guys really enjoyed that. You can follow me at Anna Hosnieh, AnnaHosnieh. You can follow our podcast at... I know, I always felt... Because who can be like, Anna Hosnieh? Oh, perfect. Got it. And then, you know, go to our website, ethnicallyambiguouspod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at ethnicallyamb, A-M-B. You can follow us on Instagram at ethnicallyambig, A-M-B-I-G. And, yeah, you know, keep up with our shit. I hope you guys enjoyed this three-part series of my interesting people of Berlin. I enjoyed doing it. Hopefully I can do more travel interesting stuff like this. Yeah, so keep listening. Go follow Yellen. Eat good food and respect that your chefs are struggling in the kitchen to stay together. And go NBA. Woo! Fear the deer.